At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, July 15th, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and my job here on today's show is to help you become a better investor by answering your finance and investment questions, giving you data and perspective, both with over nearly 25 years of investment experience, and I can really help you take that next step. That's what this show is about, taking that next step in your financial journey. And that's why we encourage you to call. Your questions are always top of mind. They're most important. I have topics on the docket, but that's always secondary to your topics. Pretty wild, interesting weekend with the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump. And that reverberated a bit in markets as well. So we will unpack that. That impact, not the story. You can find that story kind of anywhere, but really what impact that had on markets. So we will get to that. And we're going to touch on the market performance for today in a bit and run down other show topics. But first, we will tackle our first caller question now.
Hi, I was calling about Medtronic MDT. I don't own it. I was thinking of picking it up as a turnaround. Just wanted to know what you guys thought about that. I'll be listening on the podcast. Thank you.
All right, looking at Medtronic, and yeah, this is actually a name we have been stepping into slowly over the past few months. You know, technicals are still kind of neutral. They bottomed back in November and, you know, not making new lows, so that's a positive, but still kind of in this consolidation phase, we think, before really getting back to more reasonable valuations, because we do think it is a very undervalued name. Earnings are supposed to reach about nearly $6 per share next year, trading at $77. So you're talking about a mid-teens P ratio, where earnings are still expected to grow next year. Revenues are supposed to grow in the mid-single digits. Big company, right about $100 billion market cap. And one thing we love is not a whole lot of debt, only about $17 billion in net debt on its balance sheet, which is good. And, you know, the dividend probably not going to go up soon because they do need to improve their cash flow. But, you know, you're talking about a business with a lot of great assets and great IP and just consistent growth throughout the years. So, you know, I wouldn't say it's bargain basement, but it's certainly undervalued. And, you know, really put a ton of capital behind it. I think we need to see the technicals firm up a little bit more. But I like what you're looking at from a long-term perspective. Medtronic, for everyone out there, they make implantable cardiac devices, think pacemakers. They make insulin pumps, surgical robots, surgical tools, et cetera. So very well diversified within the medical space. And we like the equipment and suppliers more than we like the drug companies. Just because the demand for their products just continues to be steady, okay? And so we also like the fact that this is a global company. Roughly half of its sales come overseas. And so I think if the dollar does get weaker, that will benefit them as well. So we like Medtronic overall in the long term at these prices. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes. And our main focus point is about a rule change that is likely to help the big banks. Another reason why the bigger banks tend to be a more attractive place to be than those smaller banks. Even though you might see better lower P ratios or bigger yields on a lot of those small banks, this along with other factors are big reasons why if you want bank exposure, you probably want to stick with larger names. Why? Because the Federal Reserve is considering a rule change that could save the biggest banks billions of dollars in capital that will allow them to lend more and reduce the what is called the global significantly important bank surcharge that basically forces them to keep a higher capital buffer. Post-financial crisis, these are companies like JP Morgan, Citigroup, Bank of America. And we will look at what type of impact this could have on those companies, their profits, and ultimately their stocks. In addition, we have other topics on the docket. One is in regards to the shift in investor sentiment towards not just EVs, but hybrid vehicles. And there is a commodity play that is starting to gain some traction now based on the fact that, yeah, EV sales are slowing dramatically and hybrid sales are resurging. And so we're going to look at that story. And in addition, eviction notices. Eviction notices are up across the country. What does this mean for the housing market, as well as the broad economy? Because so many people are reliant on rent, and both for income, if you're a landlord, as well as obviously those that pay rent and how much that eats into their disposable income. So we will look at that story. And then if we have time, China. China continues to struggle, and update kind of on what's happening in the Chinese economy overall. So that's what's on the docket for us today, as well as your questions. That's most important. We have some voice bank questions. One is on recognized dividends, and we have some questions that came in via our YouTube channel as well. And of course, your live calls are most important. We're heading into a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. But please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk voice bank at 888-99-CHART.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about H&E Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk,
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk,
with host and financial advisor Justin Klein.
And that volatility. Go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
InvestTalk.
Ticker symbol THC.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Let's go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's take a quick look at the markets for today. It was a modest up day. There were certainly some names that ran based on an increasing likelihood that we will have a second Trump administration. And you had Bitcoin and anything related to that up nicely. You had also some other names. DJT was up, his SPAC that was up pretty big, although it did fade kind of later in the day. And you just continue to have this push towards pricing in another Trump administration. And you had interest rates, those were up a little bit on the day, on the long end, really pricing in maybe potential higher economic growth. That's certainly a factor as well. So, you know, we still are waiting for that true confirmation of that rotation in markets. I talked about it on our YouTube channel. I don't know if you know this, but every weekend, pretty much, I do a video about 15 minutes breaking down the economic data for the week, breaking down the charts, and just going over what I'm seeing, bullish, bearish on different markets, etc. So I encourage you to head over there. But on that video, I talked about how Thursday of last week was that big, huge move down in the growth to value trade. And you certainly had some high profile names down today, I believe Amazon was down. You had, was Google down? Google's up. Meta was down about 271 today. Apple was strong. Tesla was strong. So certainly a mixed bag here. And something that we'll be watching to see if there's some follow through here. But a lot of this has to do with, you get another Trump administration, there's likely to be a new Fed chair that would be probably more dovish, right? Lowering interest rates. The economic agenda would certainly want a weaker dollar to make our products more competitive. So I could see that being an ultimately an end result, which would help more domestic manufacturers, domestic companies. And that's probably another reason why small caps were up nearly 1% today. The broader market was only up about 0.33%, but small caps certainly did the best on that expectation that there will be a more domestically focused economic policy, shall we say. And that's what the market is really pricing in. Gold was up on the news, as well as Bitcoin. So that certainly is pricing in more uncertainty, as well as that weaker dollar and then lower interest rates going forward. So that's really was the market today. And we're into earnings season. Okay. So last week, Friday, we had the banks. They were kind of a mixed bag. But I think what's going to be most important will be the NVIDIAs of the world. You know, NVIDIA was down a little bit today, not much, but certainly there's a lot of expectations there that are built in. And I think later this week, we're actually going to dig into whether or not AI is a bubble and is about to pop. So we'll talk about that. But, ultimately, if the earnings don't live up to the hype, which certainly there's a lot of hype in that space, that could certainly give a big setback to the overall market. So a lot riding on this earnings season. I hope you've been telling your friends that our Invest Talk audio podcast is also in video form over on our YouTube channel. And we get questions submitted via the comment section over there. And Ghut P5U says, wondering what you think of LWLW at the current price. It is still in a strong downtrend, but would you consider buying it if it reverses? Well, that's you have hit it on the head a little bit, which is, yeah, if it reverses, if there's some sort of technical catalyst that says, okay, this is now going to head the other way. But, what does Lamb Weston do? It's an $11 billion company. It produces and distributes frozen potato, appetizers, and vegetable products to restaurants. To restaurants. We know that restaurants, the cost of eating out has gone up. People are eating out less, eating in home more. And Lamb Weston is North America's largest and the world's second largest producer of branded and private labeled potato products. Think of French fries, right? People are more health conscious and I think eating probably less French fries. Now it is very profitable, but they do have a decent amount of debt on their balance sheet. So that worries me, especially because their free cash flow went negative. When you ever have a decent amount of debt and your free cash flow goes negative, the market starts to worry and says, are you going to turn this around? Are things going to be okay? Are you going to pay back your bonds? If not, then the equity is essentially worthless. And that's what you don't want to get into, is you need to be comfortable that they're going to pull out of this downward spiral in earnings, okay, and in cash flow mainly. So the expectations going forward are not great. The technicals, as you said, not great. Relative strength, only 15. Okay. And just too much debt in the balance sheet. So I would watch it and see if it can get back on its feet. But nothing about the chart is telling me that that's going to be the case. So until then, it's just a watch list stock. You continue to watch it, monitor it for potential upgrades or downgrades in earnings. And if you get a capitulatory event and a reversal, meaning high volume and closing near the high of the day, that would be a signal that, hey, the bottom might be in and that investors are getting more confident piling back into to this name. But until then, it stays on the sidelines. Now, this is InvestStock now with over, wait for it, 59 million downloads. And that's thanks to you. I'm Justin Klein, and our work continues after this break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds. Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Markets react to uncertainty. Are you prepared? Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Your financial future depends on the answers to those questions. Justin Klein is here now and ready to talk with you. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today concerns this topic, which is really about the potential change to a major rule that was put in place post GFC, global financial crisis. And it was introduced in 2015. And this is for globally systematically important banks, GSIBs. And it is a side note to the Basel III regulations, but it's still very important. Okay. And what the Federal Reserve is looking to do is evaluate the inputs that go into calculating the surcharge that these banks are forced to hold. And the surcharge is an additional layer of capital that makes them safer. When you have a fractional reserve banking system, the more leverage a bank has, the less room for error they have. And so the whole idea was, hey, if you're over a certain size, you will have to carry an extra layer of capital so that if things do go wrong, you don't need to bail out again. That's basically the point of the capital surcharge. Okay. And collectively, US GSIBs, there are eight of them, held approximately $230 billion in additional capital in the first quarter of 2024. Now, this is capital that cannot be lent out. Okay. And they argue that the methodology to measure their size compared to the global economy is outdated and inflates their capital requirements. And so the idea is to update the coefficients that could reduce their systematic scores and thus reduce that capital buffer by as much as $8 billion for some of the largest ones like JP Morgan and Bank of America. Now, what that will allow them to do is now lend out that capital, right? Expand their lending capabilities, and thus increase their profitability. Now, obviously increases their risk, but do you think that they will allow them to go bankrupt like they did in 08? Probably not. So I see this as an easy kind of win-win for everybody within that realm, the regulators like the Fed, as well as the banks. Because it allows for at least greater economic growth in the near term, potentially. Now, they have to lend the money. If they just keep their capital buffer the same, they don't go out and lend that money, then that is not going to produce any economic growth. And you could argue that this is one of the reasons why we had sluggish economic growth post-GFC. It was because of these larger banks that became more conservative due to the PTSD of 08, but also the regulators that inflicted these capital requirements that prevented them from lending out more money. And ultimately, that growth of lending is vitally important. Most people think that the Fed and the Treasury are the ones that create dollars. But the reality is, in a fractional reserve banking system, the growth of dollars typically comes from banks lending money. Okay? And so if they're unable to do so, then that ultimately lowers economic growth and thus inflation. And so another reason why we had disinflation up until the pandemic. Now, this could be another source of actually inflation, right? To where these banks can suddenly expand and take a bit more risk in areas that, you know, they had to be a little bit choosier before because, hey, they have a limited amount of capital and they need to take modest risks. But now maybe they'll take a little bit more risk. Maybe that'll expand economic growth. So and ultimately, if you're an investor, that's a reason why these large banks are going to be a bit more attractive because this unlocks more opportunity. Whereas those smaller banks, they haven't had to have this extra layer of capital buffer, which is a good thing for earnings growth, but it's not a good thing for safety. Just look at Silicon Valley Bank, for example. They didn't have to have that extra layer of capital. So this is why if you're investing in banks, those large banks, I think there's a lot more tailwinds and just general safety due to the fact that the government won't allow them to kind of go under. So interesting story there, and will certainly have an impact on the earnings season. Now let's see if I can fit in another caller question here. You know the number. It's 888-99-CHART.
Long-time listener here from Minneapolis, Minnesota area. About a week ago or so, you mentioned something about dividends. There's two types of dividends. I think you said there's like recognized and unrecognized dividends or something of that sort. I've never heard of that before. What exactly is the difference of that? Educate me on that, I guess. And how would it affect my taxes, my income taxes, and so on? You guys have a great day. Love the show. Keep it up.
I think you're talking about qualified versus non-qualified dividends. And this is pretty simple. The type of companies or entities, shall we say, that pay non-qualified dividends would be REITs, real estate investment trusts, as well as master limited partnerships or any limited partnership type, okay? Those are going to be taxed at your ordinary income tax rate based on who you are, what your other income is, etc. Qualified dividends are typically your standard dividends you're getting from normal corporations traded on major exchanges. And vast majority of companies are paying qualified dividends. Those are taxed at a more advantageous rate. They're 0, 15, or 20%, depending, once again, on your income. So make sure you understand that when you're looking at a dividend yield, make sure that it's a qualified dividend. And if it's not, you have to adjust for your tax rate to understand the appropriate rate that you will be you actually be getting. Okay. Now, on the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic, retirement account strategies to reduce taxes. That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. Invest Talk. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. Let me give you a quick question on stock ticker MedPace, MEDP. It's been on my watch list for a while. I think it has some pretty good fundamentals. I know that the PE ratio is pretty high, about 42, so I'm just looking for an entry point. Don't have a lot of healthcare stocks in it too, but it does seem like it has a good return of equity as well. So thank you very much and have a great day. Bye.
All right, looking at MedPace Holdings, and this is an interesting one. It's certainly a growth name and it's priced as such. $14 billion market cap. The technicals are just fine. The relative strength is 94. So it's doing very well. Like you said, return equity very high, 64%. But it's that valuation that you have to be concerned about. 7x price to sales ratio, enterprise value to EBITDA around 35 times. That is expensive. But earnings are expected to go from $8.88 last year to all the way to $13.17 next year and $11.27 this year. So pretty solid, you know, mid to low 20% growth over the next couple of years. And, you know, what type of multiple are you going to put on that? Right now, it's even based on forward-looking earnings, you're talking about a 30-plus P ratio. That is pretty expensive, but not, I wouldn't say egregious. I wouldn't say it's egregious. It's expensive, okay? A lot of this is a momentum play. You know, the technicals are fine, certainly outperforming the vast majority of the market. And for everyone out there, what MedPace does is they provide outsourced clinical development services to biotechnology companies. So they help with kind of late stage research, and it's basically a contract researcher organization. And so they provide full service drug development, clinical trial services, et cetera. Here's the issue. Typically in a higher interest rate environment, biotechs don't do very well. Why? Because it's a lottery ticket and the cost of capital is very high. And so there's a lot less money sloshing around to go and make these investments. It just doesn't pencil out, especially if there are potentially restrictions on the ability for drug companies to raise prices and negotiate with Medicare, for example. That's one thing to worry about. Now, the other side, the other argument is, and remember, there's always two sides to every argument. The other argument is, hey, there's a lot of patent cliffs for the existing pharma companies, and they're going to take that current cash flow and plow that into clinical trials to try to replenish their IP, right? That is rolling off the books. And so there's certainly some demand there. So I would say it's fine in the near term, but it's expensive. And if there is some sort of setback in that growth, this will fall quickly and dramatically. You know, you'll have a bad earnings report. It'll go down 20-30% in a day. That's what happens to these growth names that disappoint. So that's the big risk here, but hey, it might double from here before that 20 or 30% drop happens. That's certainly possible as well. So high risk, the technicals are fine, it's a good business, but due to the valuations, there's an elevated level of risk that you have to watch out for. So that's my take on MedPace, M-E-D-P. Now let's talk a little bit about the trend towards money going into different types of metals that are not metals that go into EVs. Okay, that was one of the big trends. Everyone was falling in love with lithium, and I've been saying for a while now that lithium is not the best green metal to go invest in, and you've seen that with Albemarle and all the other lithium producers falling dramatically. So lithium isn't the place to be. And one of the other big reasons why it's fallen is because EV demand is not what it's all cracked up to be. And this is a perfect example. And this, you could apply this to AI, that there's a lot of hype. It's easy to build hype. It's harder to actually sustain a business with the same level of growth over an extended period of time. And that's what's happened in the EV market. And I said this for years now. I said, car companies are terrible businesses. They're just bad businesses, whether it's an internal combustion engine car or not. It's highly capital intensive, it's highly cyclical, and it's a very competitive industry. That's why you go look at most of these companies, they have very low profitability. And what you see as of late is the demand for EVs is struggling for various reasons. High costs of these cars and poor infrastructure for charging. In Europe, EV growth, 2% year over year. But hybrid growth, up 21% year over year. And in the US, hybrid growth is at 35% year over year, faster than EVs. And so investors are pouring money into a different type of metal, platinum and palladium, which go into catalytic converters that help reduce emissions in traditional ICE engines. And that's what you need with a hybrid. And I've said this for years, that if you want to make the auto fleet of the world cleaner, by far the best way to go is hybrids. By far, it's not even close. Why? Because you already have the technology for the engines that are very efficient, especially at high speeds. Think of highway driving. And then you marry that with EV technology, battery technology, that's very efficient at low speeds around town. And therefore, you have a car that can do both. It can be very efficient at on the highway. It can be very efficient around town. And not only that, but all the EV batteries that go into one, all the batteries that go into one EV, you can make 4 or 5 hybrid cars. My current car, I just bought it at the end of last year. It's a hybrid. It's a plug-in hybrid. Goes roughly 50 miles. I can go to my office and back home pretty much on full charge with a little bit to spare. I barely use the internal combustion engine part, but if I have to make a few more stops, I need to go, you know, on longer distances, I can certainly do that. It's a much better way to make our auto fleet more efficient. And as with most things in business, what makes the most sense tends to rise to the top. And that's what's happening now with hybrids. Hybrid demand is surging. And now people are putting money, once again, into these metals that were down in the dumps, platinum and palladium, because it was priced in that, hey, these internal combustion engine cars, they're going the way of the dinosaur and you won't need catalytic converters anymore. But the reality is exactly the opposite. You actually need these. It's untenable. It's not possible to go to an entirely EV fleet. And Toyota is killing it because they have history in being able to build these plug-in hybrids. And so it's hybrid for longer, plug-ins for longer. And so this is a great AI play, as well as platinum's a good play on the AI boom, because what goes into hard disk drives? Platinum. So platinum and palladium, if you're looking at EV metals or this push towards hybrids, this is a pretty good opportunity right now. Now let's keep things moving and swing back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier from Michigan.
This is Amir calling from Michigan. Thank you so much for your great show. I have a question about United Rentals. It grew rapidly during the past, 3 months. It has a quite good amount of earning. I just wanted to know your idea about this stock. Thank you so much. Bye.
All right. United Rentals, they provide construction equipment, industrial equipment rentals through nearly 1,600 locations in North America as well as Europe. And you're right, it's a good business. Now, business is slowing a bit, and that's why it's kind of, I think, had a step back here. But overall, I don't mind it. I like it. They obviously have a lot of debt, but, you know, it's a capital-intensive business, so it makes sense. Not so much debt that you really have to worry about it, to be honest with you. But return on equity, 32%. This is a perfect example of, it's yield, dividend yield is about 1%, and most people would say, it's only 1%. That's not that great. But it's all about the quality of the business. This is a very quality business, free cash flow, nearly $1 billion. I like this. I like this company. The technicals are fine. You have relative strength at 90. And if there is a resurgence in economic growth due to a weaker dollar, due to lower interest rates, this is the type of name that will benefit. So I'm going to give URI, United Rentals, a thumbs up. Right. Let's grab another caller question now.
I've just got a question about transferring either cash or equities from individual taxable account into a Roth IRA. I'm assuming if I transfer cash, it's just going to be deducted from my 6,000 cap for the year. But I'm wondering what happens if I transfer shares or a whole position. Does it get deducted from my max contribution at the value of it at the time I trade it? Or is there any considerations or things to think about when transferring things over like that? Thank you guys very much. Appreciate all you do. Have a good one.
So IRA contributions can only be made with cash, not with positions. That's simple. So yeah, if you transferred cash from another brokerage account, it's just like transferring cash from your bank or writing a check or anything like that. You cannot make an IRA contribution with positions. Now you can make an IRA conversion. You can convert from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. You can convert positions. You can do that. But as a contribution, not a conversion, a contribution, you can only do that with cash. Thanks for the call. Now let's touch a bit on evictions. Evictions are skyrocketing, but mainly in kind of the Sun Belt. Eviction filings over the past year in a half dozen cities, typically surrounding big metropolitan areas, are up 35% more compared to pre-2020 norms, so pre-pandemic. This includes areas like Las Vegas, Houston, and Phoenix. And Phoenix is a big one, where landlords filed 8,000 eviction notices in January. And the hearings on these in Phoenix, they last less than a minute typically. Overall, eviction notices were up 15% or more compared to the period before the pandemic for 10 out of 33 cities ranked by the Eviction Lab. And they're looking at the last 12 months. Okay. So New York City, Philadelphia, and other cities, those are the ones that stayed down, mainly due to continued protection for renters. But you're seeing these elevations, like I said, mainly in the Sun Belt. Also Columbus, Ohio, that's going up big. Minneapolis and St. Paul area also have elevated rates. And this is all because rents are too damn high, right? Rents are very high. They went up dramatically post-pandemic. Asking rents for houses and apartments nationwide rose 30% in the 4 years between 2020 and 2023. And 1 in 4 renters are spending over 50%. Think about that. 1 in 4 renters are spending 50% or more of their income on housing. Okay. And, this has left a lot of people strapped for cash, and a lot of the evictions are because some of these moratoriums on evictions are starting to be let up. The the ability for landlords to file evictions are also improving because they use property management software that pre-fills out the eviction notices and sends them to the local courts. So that's making it easier as well. And really, the assistance, you know, the rent assistance, that's going by the wayside. And so you're starting to see the buildup that's happened over the past few years really let loose. And they're no longer in most areas allowing people to live in places kind of rent free, like they did kind of during the pandemic, because the emergency is gone, right? The Center for Disease Control and Prevention no longer has that those evictions frozen, right, nationwide. And so being a landlord, it's becoming a little bit easier in most states and trying to get that money fulfilled. But it also is going to impact the overall economy, because if people are having trouble, if they haven't had to pay rent, you know, that's money they can go out there and spend. But if suddenly now they're evicted, they have to actually go out, put a deposit down, start paying rent again, you know, that's certainly going to impact the broader economy. So very interesting statistics that is something that continues to surge to the upside. All right. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds. Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
Call Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART. Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds. Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
Call Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
This is Eric. I'm calling from Phoenix. I had a question about RSG, Republic Services. I just wanted to see what you thought would be a fair price for this company, and that's it. Thank you guys very much for the show. Bye-bye.
All right, looking at Republic Services, Inc., and this is one of the largest trash companies in the world or in the country, and pretty big name, $63 billion market cap. And what price would be good? Well, a lot lower than here, because it's a great business, and I like that you're looking at it, but this is literally the most expensive pretty much it's ever been. When you look at different metrics like enterprise value to EBITDA, price to sales, etc. So it would need to be much, much cheaper. Where I would think it'd be, where is our fair value? Closer to $140 per share is at $201. So back to October levels, that would be a good place to pick up RSG. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's touch on the Chinese economy. And it's been on a downslide for a while now, and there was some news over the weekend about their economic growth, and it slowed to 5.2% last year from 7.8% a decade earlier, and it continues to surprise to the downside. And it's really about the poor investments that they made throughout the last 20, 25 years in the real estate sector. You know, they relied so much on real estate for their growth. And it's a perfect example of, you know, GDP is kind of a bad measure of the growth of the economy. It's GDI is better. Gross domestic income is a much better way to look at it. But they were so focused on GDP, which is how much are we going to build? And roughly a quarter of their economy for a lot of that growth was the real estate sector. And there was a lot of borrowing on the city level. and being sponsored by state-owned financing groups and entities that helped acquire land, open up hotels, amusement parks. Many of these were really unused, unnecessary. And it was just all about showing, hey, we're doing something. We're creating jobs and economic growth. And it's the perfect example of how misallocations of capital can destroy an economy. Doing things just to do things, doing things because they sound good and it may look good in the short term, is one of the surest ways to put yourself into mounting levels of debt that you cannot pay back. And that's what's happening in China. And it's really a slow motion train wreck that the Chinese government is trying to manage through. And at the heart of this mess are really complex state-owned funding vehicles that borrow money on behalf of local governments and for development projects that really don't have much economic return. Economists estimate the size of these off-the-books debt, things that really hard to see, is somewhere between $7 and $11 trillion, about twice the size of China's central government debt. Okay, so think of our housing market and how much debt we had in 08 and the debt upon debt, right? The leverage of CDOs and et cetera. That was many multiples the size of our government debt at that time. And you're seeing a similar situation here. Now, it's a bit different because a lot of this is was driven by local leaders as opposed to, you know, banks and financial institutions that were nefarious. Okay. And really, it's just mismanagement from the top down, you know, because, you know, you're talking about the Communist Party that wants to they want to please the party leaders, and they want to show this economic growth. And this was the easiest way for them to do that. But $800 billion of all of that debt is at very high risk of default. And recently, you had the Moody's and Fitch lower their outlook on Chinese credit to negative from stable, mainly because of this local government debt. And so the reckoning is starting to arrive there. And that's why you're likely to see more stimulus out of China, but more towards other parts of the economy. And I think you're seeing a slow motion crash of their real estate market, something that's been kind of you saw from a long time, long ways away. This was talked about on 60 Minutes over a decade ago, and it's finally coming to fruition. So it still remains an economy that's really hard to invest in because of that debt. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And I hope you head over to our YouTube channel and subscribe and check out all of our charts that we play over there. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.